Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome back to season 3 of The Moments That Made Me. I'm so excited for this new series. We have some unbelievable guests lined up. We are going to be listening to defining moments. We're going to be talking about manifesting, self-love, empowerment, and hopefully leaving you all inspired to live your best life. Talking of which, my new book, Manifest 7 Steps to Live Your Best Life, is finally out. The response has been unbelievable. I cannot believe we sold out the country in 48 hours. My mind was truly blown, but we are finally back in stock. You can actually order it now from Amazon or Waterstones, and you will learn everything you need to know about manifestation. Hopefully you will understand by the end of it that it's not something you do, but it is a self-development practice to live by. And I cannot wait for you all to read it and for it to hopefully change your life. If you do love it, please don't forget to leave a review on Amazon, Audible, or whatever website you purchase it from. Thank you so much. And now I'll stop chatting and we'll get to our first guest. Today, I am unbelievably honored and excited to be talking to none other than Vex King. Vex is the author of best-selling books, Good Vibes, Good Life, and Healing is the New High, and is one of the UK's most prominent mind coaches. His daily posts on social media offer the most insightful, moving, and healing words, and they have garnered him almost 1 million followers. I read his book earlier this year, and 2 chapters in, I knew I needed to have him on the show so I could hear his 3 defining moments. And I was over the moon when he kindly agreed to come on. So Vex, hello.
Hi, Roxy. Thank you. Thank you for that incredible intro, by the way.
Oh, no, thank you so much for coming on. And I know I was reading a post on your Instagram just yesterday, and you've just scrapped a year of research and 17,000 words to embark on a new book. So how are you feeling?
I feel the pressure, I'm not going to lie, because, you know, I have kind of expectations with delivery kind of deadlines for the next book. But I have to stay true to my intuition. My intuition's never failed me in the past. And when I was writing the book that I was writing after a year of research and being around 17,000 words in, I just felt like this isn't the book for this particular period or this particular moment in my life. There's another book that I've avoided, and I felt like that was the book I needed to write. So it's going to be an interesting few months. I'm going to be locked away. I've got a meditation room in my house. Usually there's no technology in this room, but I always make the exception when I'm writing books. So I've kind of set up a little area with loads of, well, with my laptop and loads of other books that I can kind of refer to for research. And I'm just going to be kind of locked away trying to get this new book out there.
Well, I cannot wait to read it. So Vex, let's start with hearing about your first defining moment that got you to where you are.
Right. So defining moment, is it okay if I kind of mention a defining period?
Of course, of course.
Okay, thank you. Because I feel like I owe my kind of childhood, you know, I've got immense gratitude for my childhood, not at the time, of course, but I think a lot of people that have heard me talk in the past or have read my books know that my childhood was really tragic. It was really difficult. I lost my dad 6 months after I was born. Then my mum's business with an abusive family member went bankrupt. We were homeless for 3 years. Poverty was a massive theme throughout my childhood. So was violence. And all of that has kind of led me to where I am today. And I don't think I'd be sharing these lessons that I do with the world if I didn't go through what I did as a child. I don't think I'd have, you know, stories to tell, kind of mind-shifting moments. It was because of my childhood, because of all the hardship and the adversity that I faced, that I'm a writer. I've got something to write about. But during this childhood, you know, one thing that always came to mind was that one day I'm going to change my life around. I'm going to have a better life for my, not only for myself, but for my family. And then I'm going to show other people how they can kind of alleviate a little bit of their own suffering, and how they can just live a better life. And I didn't know how that would manifest. You know, I knew one day I was going to inspire people. At least I told myself one day I was going to inspire people, but I didn't quite know how that would manifest in the future. And here I am, you know, writing books, doing talks, coaching people. And I feel like it's the greatest gift I can give others, because when I was going through a lot of the traumatic experiences and the challenges, I always said to myself that even though at the time there were people that I didn't quite see eye to eye with, I wouldn't wish this emotional pain on anyone, because, you know, I was finding it so hard just to go out in the world. And every single time I went out, I said to myself, oh my God, it's just another day in hell. That's what every day, waking up every single day in my life felt like at that time. Like things just got worse. There was a moment when we didn't have a home and we lived with my auntie and uncle, and they basically had a newsagent's shop, and we lived above the shop with them. And I remember I was upstairs with my mum once, and there was all this shouting and screaming, and she ran downstairs and she told me to stay put. And then I stayed put and I could hear more shouting and screaming. And that, on the shop floor, there was my uncle, my auntie, my two sisters, and now my mum. And as the noise got louder, I felt really uncomfortable. So I went to the top of the stairs, and at the top of the stairs, I could see a direct view of the shop floor. And I looked down and I could see my uncle with a bloody nose, a gun to his head, and guys pulling on my sister's hair and my mum's. And then my mum saw me and she quickly kind of like brushed them off. And I had my fist clenched because I didn't know what I wanted to do at that particular point. But I knew I wanted to protect my family, and I had all this adrenaline in me, and I didn't know what my next step was going to be, but I just felt like I had to protect them. And she quickly ran up to the stairs and she was like, stay there, and kind of slammed the door. And then I heard more screaming. After a while, things kind of, you know, quieted down and the police came, and basically the shop was robbed, pretty much. My family were hurt, and the police found this bullet on the floor that seemed to have escaped the gun that was held to my uncle's head. And it was just like, that was like that felt like a normal day in my childhood. And then once that happened, I always perceived threat, even if it wasn't there. Once we finally found a council home, we were unwelcome in that neighborhood. People would constantly shout racist remarks. They'd like put firework. Like, I remember once we put a washing machine outside our home, and because we were throwing it away, and someone put a fireworks in the middle of the night, and it kind of like exploded. And that was just constantly creating stress in me. And I didn't realize that that was, you know, adding to something that was already traumatic or already traumatic experiences. And I know I needed to heal, but I didn't, you know, I didn't understand the concept of healing. I know I wanted to change my life, but I was constantly feeling stressed and uneasy about everything around me. And that just drove this desire to change my life around. And every single person around me, because we were from like a kind of a poor socioeconomic background, poverty, like I mentioned, was a big theme. Everyone around me was witnessing the same kind of struggles as we were. So every time I would talk about having this dream of escaping this lifestyle and creating something better for ourselves, people would be like, well, stuff like that doesn't happen to people like us. You know, this is our reality and we have to accept it. And it wasn't until my teenage years when, you know, the internet was kind of, I'm making myself sound old here, but when I was on my dial-up internet and I would start going on internet forums and start reading, I realized that actually there were people out there who lived subjectively worse realities than I did, who managed to change their lives around. And a lot of these people read really empowering books or had empowering mentors that helped them change their lives around. So I turned to self-help books, and it was self-help books that really kind of guided me towards a more positive mindset, which then led me to make changes in line with what I desired. So I would say that is probably my, I know that was quite a long first defining moment, but I think I owe everything to my childhood. Although it wasn't easy at the time, I do look back with gratitude, because right now I get to help so many people around the world, and I get to empathize with a lot of people. I don't even know if empathize is a word, but I get to really share, or at least try and understand the emotional pain they might be going through, because I've gone through so much very early on in my life.
Oh my gosh.
So that's probably my first defining moment.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And I really, it's such a, I don't know if it's more so now I've become a mother or not, but the thought of and going through those stories with you, and I felt like I was really there, stood next to you as you were describing yourself at the top of the stairs. And there's just so much, like an indescribable amount of compassion for this sort of young Vex, this child. And I think there are so many children, sadly, who do experience this immense trauma. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like you said, it was the norm. You almost, were you even aware that it was a traumatic experience? Or were you just going through the motions?
I was literally going through the motions. This is, you know, people hear this story and they're like, oh, that's really sad. But honestly, one thing, when I started school, I remember, I think it was reception, we had to talk about our parents, and I didn't realize that every family had a mum and a dad. And I know that sounds really strange, but I only had my mum. My dad passed away when I was 6 months old, so I didn't even know that I should have had a father figure there. I thought just some families have a father figure and others don't. So when I had to describe both my parents, I was troubled. I was just like, oh, I have a mum. And then I remember the teacher asking, well, where's your like dad? What does he do? And I was just like, a dad? Like, what does that mean? And I remember going home and having this conversation. And, you know, I remember this quite vividly, actually, even though I was only 5 years old. I remember going home and saying, mum, what happened to our dad? And I remember her body language changing. And she said, you know, your dad's not around. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, he died. And I remember bursting out into tears, saying, wait, so I had a dad and he's dead. Like, because the concept of death was really scary as well. And I just didn't understand it. And all of that stuff, looking back on it, you know, I thought it was so normal at the time because I was just going through the motions. And when I talk about my life, it was even, I think, in my teenage years, I remember talking about some of the things I'd gone through. And I remember the kids in my school being like, whoa, Vex, did you really go through all of that? And I was just like, yeah, doesn't everyone go through stuff like that? And they were like, no, like you've gone through some crazy, crazy stuff. And I remember one guy even saying, Vex, one day you should write a book about your life because it sounds like one long episode of EastEnders. I was just like, yeah, maybe. At the time, I wasn't really writing, but I was like, yeah, maybe I should. So yeah, I was just living through the motions and not really questioning stuff because it was just so normal. And also, there was just so many things happening and it was just one after the other. And although there were amazing moments in my life, there were so many moments that were causing stress. It was almost like I was waiting for the next thing to go wrong. And I know that sounds quite tragic, but that's how my life felt when I was a child. It was just like, today something's going to go wrong and I'm just going to have to survive.
Boy, and you're on constantly high alert. And do you think that, I mean, firstly, I just want to say that it's so incredible to hear a story like yours. And just in terms of even the fact that I really believe that it's your soul's purpose to, because not everybody would have that experience and feel this undeniable need to change their lives. Many people would feel hopeless, would give up. And I don't blame them because when you experience that much hardship, how the hell are you supposed to start and to get yourself to understand, even to see an idea that there might be another way of living? Mm-hmm. So it is really beautiful, I think, to hear such an intrinsic purpose within you that you did fulfill. And I think you're so right about the empathy because, I mean, it is only from this experience of pain, of darkness, of trauma, of stress, of that you are able to really fully understand and feel and offer that sincere compassion for others. And I feel that even in your writing, people connect to that empathy, you know, even on the internet or whatever. It's a feeling, isn't it?
Thank you. Yes. I definitely feel like when I write emotions, and if I'm reflecting on the past, I'll reflect on how I felt at that particular time. I think sometimes we can move forward on our journeys and forget where we've been, what we've been through and how we felt at those particular times. Right now, you know, I'm only human, so I will face uncomfortable emotions. But how I feel now in terms of happiness, it's so much more organic and so much more sustainable because I've worked so hard on my kind of inward journey. But I don't forget how I felt for a long period of my life. Like with the first 25 years, I would say, was, you know, really, really uncomfortable. It was a roller coaster ride. I didn't feel positive a lot of the time. I found it hard to find gratitude in moments. You know, there was times I wanted my life to end, and that's just me being completely honest and being completely real. That was, you know, part of my experience. So when people feel like that, I'm not going to straight away and turn around and be like, actually, try and be positive, because I can completely understand when you're in that state of mind or you're in that place. And if you're dealing with significant trauma, it's so much harder to view something or reframe a situation and see the kind of light in there. Although it's always there, sometimes just even biologically, it's hard for our brain to change its state because all we're used to is kind of accommodating that emotional pain and feeding that emotional pain. So I really do feel like those experiences and everything that I've gone through do really help me connect with people on a deeper level. And although I can't connect with everyone, I feel like we all go through the same emotions as human beings. And although my experiences won't be the same as everyone else's experiences, I feel like I can appeal to so many different types of people because I've gone through so many things throughout my lifetime.
So Bex, then what was your second defining moment?
So I think this is kind of linked to what we've been talking about. And a little while ago, I mentioned that, you know, I kind of lost the will to live at one point. And during my teenage years, you know, I read a book and it really opened me to the idea of positive thinking. And I really do believe, you know, even just rationally, we can think about a positive mind will give you a positive life because you're going to view the life in front of you in a positive way. So you are going to, you know, eventually evaluate your life as being more positive. Like, that's a given. But I think I went on this really unhealthy journey with positive thinking because I suppressed a lot of emotions that I didn't want kind of present in my life. And when books like The Secret, which I think are amazing books, you know, and they talk about manifestation, when they came about, I think, you know, a lot of people, especially me, took them kind of in the wrong way. I started ignoring anything negative that I felt because I was like, no, I don't want that to manifest in my reality. So I start suppressing all these emotions that just felt uncomfortable. And it wasn't until my early 20s when I was going through a really difficult time during my last year of university that I just lost the will to live. I felt depressed, and I'm going to be careful when I use the word depressed here because I wasn't clinically depressed, or at least I didn't go and get evaluated. But I know the feeling. It was a very, very dark place. I struggled to get out of bed. I sat in the dark, which sounds really strange and kind of, in a way, a little bit morbid. But I sat in the dark. I contemplated death so much. I didn't want to be here. And I would go back and revisit the dullest moments of my life. So all those periods where things went wrong, right from, you know, back to my childhood, right back to those memories of seeing, you know, my mum hurt, my uncle hurt, the gun, the violence, the neighbours not wanting us around, rejection with racism. I kept replaying them, and I would then evaluate that my life was bad, has always been bad, and there's no point sticking around. And during that moment, you know, I'm sparing a few details, but during that moment, I wanted to escape the world. I thought this isn't a life worth living. But fortunately, you know, I felt like a guided presence, and I remained here. And when I did, and I started to, you know, the emotions started to kind of die down. I started to see things with a little bit more clarity. I realized that I was on this journey, but it wasn't an authentic journey of self-love and healing. It was just me suppressing a lot to, you know, to try and think positive. And I needed to reevaluate the way I approach my journey and be on a more authentic journey of self-love. And I said to myself at that particular point, I will never go back to how I felt, because that's the lowest I've ever felt. And at the time, I thought to myself that, you know, I was burdening people by being here on this planet. But what I realized after is actually I would burden them more if I left, because I would leave this emotional pain. Like, for example, my mum's gone through so many struggles throughout her life, and sometimes, you know, I question how she does it. But to lose, you know, her son because he couldn't cope, like, imagine what that would do to her for the rest of her life, and my sisters. So, you know, I said to myself, like, from that moment, I'm going to find a way. I'm going to start addressing. I'm going to go deeper, because it isn't healthy to suppress these emotions. It isn't healthy to just ignore everything I've been through. I need to go deeper. I need to work on myself. I need to find a more organic way. And I've been doing that ever since. And again, that helps me relate so much when it comes to my writing. It helps me come up with solutions, practical solutions that people can actually use in their life to change things around. And all of that's born from this passion, from this kind of purpose that I've discovered through my own experiences. And that experience, which I just described, although I've gone through so much heartache throughout my childhood, the experience I had when things looked a little bit better, at least economically, that is the worst I've ever felt in my life. Because when mental health takes a toll, it doesn't matter what's in front of you, you're never going to be able to appreciate it, because all you can think about or all you can see is cloudiness, gloom, darkness, and life will never look good until you start addressing those emotional wounds and start kind of clearing the lens that you're viewing your life ahead of you with. So yeah, that was a really big kind of defining moment in my work and just in my life.
So beautiful. And the way that you have described, I think, this difference between the importance of sort of just positive thinking, which is just a mask and in many ways, and actually coming to a place where you can process the things that you've gone through, the experiences you've had, I think is just so important and such an amazing message to really be sending people. And I definitely have found that on my journey, I did a very similar thing of, you know, always looking forward momentum, don't look back. I didn't even have therapy, but yet I was still an advocate of self-love. Mm-hmm. And it was only when I started to address shame and trauma from a very young age that I was actually able to make significant shifts and realize the importance of looking back and processing. So I guess my question is, how do you, especially because of the things that you experienced, or mm-hmm. anybody that experiences trauma, you know, it has such an effect on our physiological body. I mean, I really believe that our muscles, our body, it stores every memory that we have. Mm-hmm. How did you begin that process of processing?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I went back to reading for starters. I started reading books by psychotherapists and psychologists, and even yogis, because the idea that our body stores traumatic experiences isn't something that's necessarily new, although in the Western world, it seems like something that's just kind of come about in the last decade or two. But even if we just look back on how we navigate the world, sometimes there'll be a trigger or something and our body will respond to it in a physical way. Our heart might start beating a little bit faster. We might start sweating. And if that experience is consistent, it usually means that there's a guiding belief behind it. So that emotional response is leading back to some sort of limiting belief. And what I did was really, I just sat with myself and I started meditation, which has been kind of like, I think, the most pivotal thing in my journey, which has really helped me understand myself. But I started to create distance between me and my thoughts and me and my feelings and just started observing things. And what I realized is that all this emotional pain that I had that kept coming up to the surface, that I kept trying to push down, had some sort of pain pattern behind it. There was something there that was consistently repeating itself, that would consistently surface a thought, a limiting thought, that would then change my biology and influence me to respond in a certain way. And then I just went deeper and deeper into the layers of myself, and I started taking better care of my body. I started connecting more with my kind of spirit. And I realized that actually, when it comes to healing, it's not just this process of you know, reframing situations and looking for the positive. It's actually getting in tune with your mind, body, and spirit. And I think that's where a lot of people kind of, I don't know, a lot of people kind of ignore the three kind of key elements, that it's a mind, body, spirit experience. And once I kind of really started nurturing those particular things, I realized that there was a much more healthier way of approaching the healing journey. And that's where it's kind of led me to today. I feel like when it comes to inner healing, you need to really look at the layers that form the self, and they can be broken down into those three key elements, which are mind, body, and spirit. And I suppose that's why the mind, body, and spirit, or the wellness space, is growing so much, because a lot of people have realized that the way they've been trying to encourage happiness isn't sustainable, isn't organic. And even with the whole positive thinking, it's once you really start healing yourself on a mind, body, and spirit level, you find that positivity comes to you not only more easily, but just more naturally. So now, although there can be situations that encourage undesirable emotions to come up, they suddenly go away much more quickly on their own. I don't have to forcefully try and resist them. I don't have to really engage in them. I can just witness them, and they will just disappear in a few moments. And now I'm back into this steady hum that I have, this equilibrium that lives inside of me. My core, some people call it your true selves, but I return back into that kind of state, and I can just navigate the world in a much more steady state with a much more clarity. And I can just approach life with kind of, you know, holding on to much more kind of joy.
Oh, I love that. I just have one question, which is for anybody listening that kind of gets the mind body, but is like, what does it really mean by nurturing your spirit? Or, you know, what is your spirit, and how, what would you say?
Yeah, I think when it comes to nurturing your spirit, it's weird because people always ask me, like, what does spirituality really mean? Like, is there a way to define it? And I think it's just nurturing something that's greater than yourself. And that, again, sounds kind of wishy-washy, but it's trusting that there's something greater than you and just connecting with it. And I feel like even if you're not a spiritual person, a lot of people do believe that there is something, and you don't have to give it a name. So, you know, some people give it names like God or Source or whatever it is. And sometimes that puts other people off. But I think it's just trusting that beyond the mind, beyond thought, beyond feeling, there's something greater than you. And really just connecting with that feeling, that knowingness of everything. What we can do when we go into our minds, we can actually sit back and realize that actually we are not our thoughts. Now, this concept troubles a lot of people, and Eckhart Tolle really has over the years tried to explain this topic in an accessible way. But we know that an object and subject is a separate kind of, is an experience where one is viewing the other, or vice versa. If we can go into our minds and see a thought, we can realize that actually we are not the thought, because we're witnessing the thought. Therefore, there's something behind the thought that's viewing that particular thought. It's the same with our feelings. When we think, oh, I feel anger, or this is anger, the fact that you're acknowledging the anger or the sadness or whatever it is means that there's something that's actually viewing it. And that's what a lot of people call awareness. Some people call it consciousness. Some people call it, I don't know, whatever it is. And I think it's just connecting with that, or knowing that that is your innate nature, that thing that witnesses the world or the activities of the mind. And that's what I think is really when we talk about nurturing the spirit, it's just connecting with that true kind of true self. The Upanishads, which is ancient Hindu scripts, talk about this self with a capital S. And that's what they were kind of getting at, that there's this witness, there's this observer, and that is really who you are. And that is essentially made from the same fabric as everything else and everyone else. And once you connect with that, you kind of feel connected, or at least I do. I feel connected to the world around me, to everything around me. I feel like everything's made from this same fabric, and everything's basically just a form of that same fabric. And once you feel that connection, I feel it just improves the way you navigate the world and all your relationships, because now you start to realize that actually you and I aren't that different. We come from the same source. And essentially that is our true nature. Don't know if I made sense there.
Absolutely did. And I think it was such an incredible description. And it really does make it very accessible, actually. You've made it so easy to understand. And yeah, I think that's exactly it. I think for me, I describe it as the universe, as an energy. And I always say, you know, we're all the same energy. We're just vibrating at different frequencies. And so I think absolutely it's spirituality is such a, I think people can get afraid of it, or especially if they think it's associated with religion or, you know, whatever. But actually there's so many ways to believe and feel spirituality and nurture it in your life.
Yeah, I think you can get so lost in all the concepts, the words, the labels. Like, I use the universe to describe the everythingness. Mm-hmm. And then some people will say, actually, there's multiple universes, so it doesn't quite make sense. But I think what we're kind of getting to is this same thing, which is just everything, totality. And there's so many ways to connect with that feeling or experience. Some people just call it a presence, and that's completely fine. You just got to find a way that kind of works for you, and find tools and techniques and avenues that help you connect with that feeling of everythingness. And it, you know, there's not one way. So it's really an individual journey that you get to experience yourself, and you can try all kinds of things that people suggest or that things that work for you, and just see where it leads to.
Hello, sorry to interrupt your podcast. We didn't do that. It's just been magically done for us. We do a podcast, which I think you might like if you like this podcast. Our podcast is called The A to Z of Men, with me, Chris Brooks.
And me, Scott Robinson.
And what's the podcast about, Scott?
I mean, what we're doing really is giving you an insight, a delve into the male mind. We're going through the alphabet letter by letter. I submit a word, Chris submits a word, and we battle it out to see what word goes into the A to Z of Men.
And you can get us wherever you get your podcast from. Just search for The A to Z of Men.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
So, Vex, what is then your third defining moment?
My third defining moment is going to sound quite cliche, I think, or a bit cringy, but it's probably meeting my wife. I met her a long time ago. Funny story, before, I'm going to make myself sound really bad, but before my wife, I didn't really have any serious relationships. I've always been a romantic deep down, and sometimes people find that hard to believe. Even especially when I was kind of, you know, in crews in school and I was associated to wrong crowds, I always loved the idea of love. I always loved the idea of being with someone for a lifetime. And I never really found that I had, you know, especially in Healing as a New High, I spoke about a relationship that didn't really work out, where I was kind of cheated on consistently. But my longest relationship before meeting my wife was 5 months. And so I didn't really have any long-term relationships. And when I met my wife, I was just exposed to a world I never knew existed. It was weird. As soon as I connected with her, I just, you know, people would say, how do you know that someone is the one for you? And it's hard to really define that. But when I met my wife, there were three things. A, I felt like I knew her for a lifetime. The second thing is that I just enjoyed every single moment I spent with her. I was always present when she was around, and that was very different. I wasn't living in my mind. I was just enjoying the energy exchange that was taking place. And then every time I thought of the future, I couldn't picture her without it. And that's how I kind of felt like, or how I knew that she was the one for me. But over time, you know, the honeymoon phase kind of, you know, subsided, and we began to see more of each other's conditioning. And we started exploring each other's personality and emotional history. And because of our relationship, I learned so much more about myself, about what it really means to be a man, because I had such a toxic view of masculinity. And, you know, how to live a functional relationship. I also discovered what true love really meant. When it comes to true love, the only time I had really experienced it was when I say true love, I mean the unconditional, the selfless kind of love. And the only time I think I'd really experienced it was with my mum and my sisters. But I'd never experienced it outside of someone in my family. And with her, you know, I really started to experience that. And I always say to her now that when I first told you I love you, there was this kind of like pressure to say I love you, because I feel like when you start meeting someone, you start really drawing closer to them, you enjoy their time, you enjoy their company, you want to say I love you and you want to hear it back. And in that way, you're kind of saying it for a selfish reason, and you're also saying it because you're starting to accept more of them. But when I say I love you to her now, it comes from a completely different place. It's so much more selfless. It's so much more, I'm keeping you in my prayers all the time. I just want what's best for you. And it's not about me. It's purely about her. And if it wasn't for our relationship, I would have never discovered that for myself. And I really mean this when I say that I feel like the right relationship is so integral to personal growth and evolution. I think it can really help you understand yourself and other people and really develop a sense of unconditional love, not just for your partner, but for other people. Because once you start to really experience it and kind of gauge it in some kind of logical way, you can start to share that unconditional love that you have for your partner, for other people outside of your relationship. And it doesn't mean that you want to be in a romantic relationship with other people. It just means that you want to be more selfless, more giving, offer something without expecting something in return, because that's what you do in your romantic relationship with your partner. So I'm extremely thankful for meeting Koshal in many ways. I'm so thankful for the challenges that we faced. You know, we've been together since we were children, and although at the start of the relationship, it might have been, you know, we were quite naive and we were expecting this fairy tale type of love that we'd seen in the movies. You know, we've really started to gain an understanding of what love really means and what relationships really mean, and how they actually don't, they're not responsible for your happiness, but they can cultivate love and support your happiness. So yeah, I think meeting my wife is probably my third moment that made me.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that is just so stunning to hear. And I absolutely love the way that you talk about love and relationships. And, you know, I obviously read your book and you talk about it there. And also you posted some really beautiful things on Instagram about the two of you and the way that you work together in your relationship. And I think it is important to read things like this and hear you speak like this, because, yeah, the fairy tale that we're sold is, I think it is so, I don't know, it just sets us up for failure in relationships, I think, because it's so easy to give up at the first hurdle.
Yeah, I think we have to remember as well that all of us have gone through some form of trauma. Traumas, you know, when you hear the word trauma, you always think of a horrific event, but it's really something that's just altered your worldview, something that you found, your mind or your body found difficult to process. And it's not necessarily what happened outside of you, it's what happened inside of you at the time you experienced the event, person, whatever it was. And we go into relationships carrying this conditioning, and some of it's really dense conditioning, and it's really, you know, dictating how you behave in a relationship. So when you go into a relationship, to be aware that someone's coming with, you know, some people like to call it baggage, but someone's coming with their baggage, but also being responsible for your own baggage and then holding space for each other to heal in. I think this, so many misleading concepts about relationships at the moment, and you see it, and you know, I bought into a lot of these concepts, but being with my wife for over a decade, and now, you know, being married to her, this, you know, you get, it's exciting because you learn so much more about each other as the days kind of progress, and there's just so much more, I think, for me to share now, and it's just come from a my experiences with around my understanding of how a relationship can function in a healthy way. But to kind of disregard all these ideas that we might have been fed through Hollywood and other kind of shows and things that we've seen online, maybe, because no relationship's perfect, but they can exist with harmony.
I love that. Thank you so much, Vex.
And thank you.
We have finished your three moments, and I do have a few quick fire questions for you. But before I do, I just want to ask you, because I'm about to go record my audiobook, and I'm feeling very nervous about reading it back. And, you know, you've had two very successful, you know, I mean, successful is an understatement, but, you know, incredible books. And how did you deal with any kind of doubt about, you know, yourself in the beginning, or if you had doubt? Like, I would just love personally just to hear your advice on that.
Well, thank you for your kind words. So with Good Vibes, Good Life, like, I've always dreamt one day I'm going to write a book. I didn't know it was going to come this early in my life, if I'd be completely honest, but I just kept reminding myself, with especially with Good Vibes, Good Life, because that was my first book and it's like, you know, my baby, it's my first offering in the world. I wrote Good Vibes, Good Life just because I want to help other people. And I know that my books can't help everyone, but they might help someone. And I kept reminding myself that why. When it comes to metrics, so for example, you might feel a pressure to sell a certain amount of books, reach a certain amount of people, and you can get caught up in all of that. But really what matters is just helping one person. And I know that sounds, you know, some people say, oh, well, that's easy for you to say because, you know, you've sold X amount of books or whatnot. But honestly, like at the start, I didn't. I my platform at the time, although it was, you know, it was like 140,000 followers, which is quite a lot. But, you know, it's not as many followers as I have now. But at the time, you know, I didn't make like any bestseller lists. I just released a book hoping that it would help people and hoping it would connect with people. And although sometimes I wished that my book would reach other, like more people, it didn't. But I just kept reminding myself, look, if my book helps one person, that's one person that's better off in the world. And how powerful is that? Just, you know, one person, it could be, you know, it could be a younger me, for example, someone that really needs this message at this time, someone that's thinking of maybe giving up on life, someone that doesn't know what to do in their life, someone that's got this goal that could change their life and their family's life. And your book could be that avenue towards that change. Like, that is a powerful thing. So I think you just have to go back to your why. Why am I writing this book? Why did I release this book? And what outcome do I want from this book? And just remember, it just starts with one person. And that's all you can do, is just try and feed that thought, that idea. And there's a quote that says, what comes from the heart always goes to the heart. And I completely stand by that. And I think, like, the book will find the people that it's meant to help.
Oh, I love surrender. I literally have like,
let's surrender stuff to the universe.
Thank you so much. That is just exactly what I needed to hear. Thank you so, so much, Beck.
And your work's great. So, it's going to reach people regardless. Like, I read your post today about happiness and I thought, you know what? It's such a powerful message that you've written. So, yeah.
Thank you so, so much. So I just have a few quick questions before you go. So okay. The first one is your most memorable book.
So the most memorable book is the book that I think I spoke about earlier in the interview. So the first book that really got me into personal development was Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
A book.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's kind of the daddy or the mother of all self-help books, I would say. I was a big martial arts fan and I remember going on this. I love hip hop and I went on this hip hop forum and there was this corner called the Knowledge Corner and people would talk about things that have helped them, philosophy, quantum physics. And I remember this one thread talking about books that have been life-changing, and everyone kept talking about Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And someone mentioned Bruce Lee reading Think and Grow Rich to change his life. And I was like, well, I love Bruce Lee. I love what he's done. I love martial arts. So I'm going to read this book. And like, that's when I kind of realized that nurturing this positivity really will lead to a positive life. And that book was the book that started it. And the principles, I think, still apply. So yeah, most memorable book.
What about your favorite quote?
My favorite quote has to come from that book. Because again, it sums everything up. I think when it comes to manifestation, goals, anything, it's, you know, whatever your mind can conceive and believe it can achieve. That quote, as soon as I read that, I printed it out and I stuck it up and I was like, this quote, I'm going to read this over and over again, because I started studying. I was really into sports as a child. I still am, but I was really into sports as a child. And I started studying the greatest athletes in the world. And I realized that all of them had this concrete belief system that they can do what they set out to achieve, and they did it. So that quote for me sums it all up, especially when it comes to manifesting goals. So it's whatever your mind can conceive and believe, it can achieve.
Ah, it's so beautiful. It's so funny. I think that everything, so, well, I really actually believe everything comes back to manifesting in some way. Speaking about the same concept, about our power, our limitless power and potential to change our realities.
Yeah.
Your go-to feel-good film?
My go-to feel-good film, that's an interesting question. I'm going to answer this with two answers. One is a book that just inspires me, and it's more for, a film that inspires me, and it's more so because of the ending of the movie, and it's The Pursuit of Happiness, starring Will Smith, because the starting kind of reminds me of my journey with my mum. Because I remember, like, she would hold me close during moments where we were struggling, and there was times when, like, drunken old men would follow us back home and I'd be scared, and she'd hold me close and she'd be like, I can beat them up, don't worry. But I knew she was scared. Like, I could sense it. I knew she couldn't beat up these guys, but she was trying to reassure me that things would be okay. But it had a happy ending. And that moment in the movie when, you know, he gets the job and he starts crying, I remember feeling that, like, you know, like, there is good out there. And it just, yeah, it just reminds me that, you know, although you come from a difficult background, you can achieve great things. And the other movie, I know this is going to be like Vex, really, but the other movie is Superbad.
Oh my God, what a great film.
I watched that, so it's just so funny, and I just love all the characters. I love McLovin. And yeah, that movie just makes me laugh. So yeah, it's just a feel-good movie. That and The Hangover. I love The Hangover as well. Yeah,
that is a great answer. who is your most influential mentor?
Okay, again, I'm gonna try not to say Napoleon. So Napoleon Hill, because of his books and so much of his early work influenced my kind of direction and exposed me to personal development. But actually, one person that I see as an influential mentor is a guy named David R. Hawkins. He's one of my favorite authors. He's a spiritual teacher. He's known for his research with consciousness, and he's also got this background as a clinician, scientist, and mystic. And he really helps people understand logically what spirituality is, all the nature of spirituality. And it's weird because when we talk about spirituality, what we're talking about, something beyond mind, right? So it's a kind of a subjective experience, a knowingness. But then to use your mind to describe, because language is a manifestation of the physical world, so to describe something that's beyond the mind really runs into a kind of a contradiction or a conflict. But he does it so well. Like, everything he says, well, most of the things he says, really resonates with my journey inward. And he's played such a massive role when it comes to spirituality and just trying to understand what I felt throughout my journey. So he's probably my most influential teacher. I do feel like his books are quite hard to understand because they're quite sciencey. Although I do love science, I feel like, you know, it's quite difficult to digest. But yeah, I just feel like his work's really been eye-opening for me, and it's played a massive role, and it still continues to play a massive role in my life at the moment.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. I'm definitely going to check him out. What is a moment where you felt most proud?
I would say that, again, maybe not an answer people might expect from me, but paying off all of my mum's debt and her mortgage is probably, I watched her struggle my whole life, Literally, yeah. And I would look at her and be like, how are you doing this? And I remember when I was a child, I didn't understand the world. I didn't understand how money worked. I just thought, you know, you could just find more money. And I wanted things that I couldn't have, that the other kids had. And my mum would always turn around and say, one day you're going to question how I did what I've done in my life. And I didn't quite get it until I started growing up. And and she was right. I would always question, like, how did she help us survive? How did she put food on the table? Like, she would always deliver when she needed to. And I would tell myself as a child that one day I was going to alleviate her suffering, maybe not internally, but at least from the economic kind of side, which was responsible for so much heartache. Like, I think unless you've experienced severe poverty, it's extremely hard to understand the role money can play in your life. Like, you know, some days we didn't know if we were going to eat, so when we did eat, we kind of scoffed food down and we made sure nothing went to waste. But, you know, all we knew was poverty for a long period of our lives. And I saw how much stress it created within my mum. I think as a parent, you know, you want to give your kids the best. And when your child comes to you and says, like, oh, why don't I have what other kids have? Or why can't I do what other kids are doing? I think it would have been heartbreaking for her to turn around and say, look, we can't, because I know my mum, she's full of love and she would have always wanted what's best for me. She would have wanted to give me. And I remember once, I think I was like 11 or 12, and she bought me this top. And it wasn't, so basically in school, when it was, did you have Mufti Day in school by any chance?
What's Mufti?
So Mufti Day is when you get to like dress up in just your normal clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember, like, when we went to school, there was a pressure to wear something that was not necessarily, that was branded, basically. So if you didn't, you'd kind of get picked on. And my mum would always ensure that something was kind of branded. So she'd buy something that was branded. And I would save that particular top for Mufti Day because I didn't want the other kids to know how poor we were. But one birthday, she couldn't give me something that was branded, and she gave me this top and she said, look, I'm really, really struggling. So this is all I could afford. And at that point I realized, like, you know, she was trying her best to make me happy. She was making sure that I went to school and I didn't get bullied or singled out. And I always wanted to repay her for that. And even as a child, I would get birthday money from like my uncle or other people, and I would save all my money for her birthday and buy her a gift. So I always wanted to, you know, I just wanted to, I saw my mum experience so much stress and sadness, and I've always just wanted her to feel a little bit of freedom and liberation from all the heartache and the financial stress. So the day I was able to pay off all her debt, which was, you know, 30 years of debt, pay off her mortgage and be like, look, mum, just live your life, please. Like, just enjoy yourself. Do the things you've always wanted to do. That was one of my, I think, proudest moments.
That is just so, like, heartwarming and touching. I just have so much admiration for your mom. And she just sounds like such an incredible woman. And bond between you, honestly, is, my heart just melts.
Oh,
that true, that bond, there's nothing like it. And to hear it is just so, so incredible.
Oh, thank you.
What is your top tip for dealing with stress?
My top tip for dealing with stress. So there's a technique that I do that I think works with a lot of people. So this technique basically helps you slow your nervous system down when it's kind of overstimulated. And it also keeps you tuned into the present moment. So you're not living in your head, because when you're living in your head, you're overthinking, and that just creates more and more stress. Essentially what this technique does, it kind of switches you from the fight or flight mode, where we tend to kind of panic, to a rest and digest mode, where we can remain calm and centered. So there's various ways to do this particular technique. I can't remember who invented the technique, but there is a guy that was kind of responsible for it. But I like to do a different approach to his particular technique. And basically, it's extremely simple. And it's just to take a slow and deep breath in for a count of four, then hold it for another 4 seconds, and then slowly release it for 8 seconds. So you're basically doubling the release. So instead of 4 seconds, you're releasing it for 8. So it's 4, 4, 8. So basically 16 seconds in total. And you can just you can keep repeating this process until you feel a state of calm. But I feel like it just works instantly. If you're feeling panicked, you're feeling stressed or overwhelmed, you can straight away turn to this breathing technique and just focus your awareness on your breath. And it's just going to calm you down straight away.
Such a fab technique. I absolutely love that one. So thank you. And the last question is, who is the first person you call to share good news?
Oh, it's definitely my wife. Straight away. Yeah, it's... to be fair, like, there's been time. So I don't share, like, sometimes things will happen in my field. Celebrations, maybe. Like, she's really my cheerleader. Like, I don't talk about stuff that I've achieved, and she's always there telling other people, like, did you know Vex is... And it's nice to hear, because she's so proud of everything I've achieved. But sometimes, like, she'll find out that I've achieved something through something else, and she's just like, you didn't tell me. And I was just like, oh, I didn't think it was a big deal. And she's like, oh my god, it's massive, like, what are we doing to celebrate? So she's constantly there to remind me, actually, you do need to celebrate your small wins. To me, they're small. To her, they're huge, which is nice. But I, you know, if I do feel like, you know, I've achieved something that is worth sharing, she's the first person, because she wants to hear it. It's not that I need to tell her. It's that she wants to hear it. She wants to celebrate, and she wants to just give me a big hug or scream or shout or whatever it is and just celebrate with me.
Oh, I love that. Well, Vex, thank you so, so much for being such an incredible guest. I have been waiting for this chat for so long, and I'm just so honoured. And you are just so insightful. You have so much wisdom, and you speak so sort of poetically and express ideas and concepts in a way that I think is so relatable and accessible to people. So thank you for everything that you do.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me again. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.